From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Yesterday, we learned that 40 million Target shoppers are suddenly very nervous. That's because key information from their credit and debit cards may have been stolen, leaving open the possibility of identity theft, fraud, and compromised accounts. In our next hour forum, we get some guidance on how to protect your identity and your wallet. With five more shopping days until Christmas, scam artists are everywhere. We'll take up what to do and what not to do. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. It's the most wonderful time of year, if you're an identity thief. So says Identity Theft 911, an anti-fraud company, and there are about 40 million Target shoppers today who would agree. As we learned yesterday, that's how many credit and debit cards may have been compromised by people shopping at Target between the end of November and the middle of this month. Why does this time of year pose special opportunities for those identity thieves and the special dangers that it poses for the rest of us? In this hour forum, we're going to try to find out the answer to that question and also dig into what consumers can do to keep their credit accounts and their identities secure. Joining us to take up that conversation, Kim Zetter, senior writer who covers cybersecurity for Wired magazine. Kim, good morning.
Good morning.
Joining us, too, is Lisa Schifferle, attorney and private and identity protection division within the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC. Lisa Schifferle, good morning as well.
Good morning.
And Eva Velasquez joins us. She is the CEO of Identity Theft Resource Center, a nonprofit based in San Diego that provides assistance to victims of identity theft. Eva Velasquez, good morning as well.
Good morning, and thank you, Dave, for covering this important topic.
We're happy to have all of you join us. Kim Zetter, let's get started with first going through what happened at Target. This morning, Target is apologizing to everyone. A lot of Target shoppers are apparently having a hard time getting through to the company to figure out what's going on. How worried should people be who make up that 40 million of Target customers?
The customers actually shouldn't be all that worried. Any charges that are made to their card will be covered by the banks, so the customers themselves won't be out. They will have to, of course, get some new cards, so there might be some inconvenience there in that time between when an account might be canceled and they get a new card. But as far as customers are concerned, there's no liability for them in this.
Do they, though, have to worry about sort of if someone has that information, what sort of doors that might open for them to get at something else?
No, because this isn't the same as someone, for instance, hacking a password and then you might be using that password on multiple accounts. I mean, the inconvenience for the customer, of course, is that any ongoing account that they have connected to this card is going to have to be changed. So if you've got, let's say, a Netflix subscription or some automatic payments that are being purchased or being charged against this card, then you're going to have to go in there and add the new account to that. So that's going to be some inconvenience there. There's no other security risk to the users, though.
Tell us something, Kim, about how this happened. And we don't know a lot yet, and we don't know a lot from the company itself, but what do you think is going on? How does this sort of thing take place?
Well, it's unclear. They haven't provided a lot of details, and it's unclear exactly how Target's system is set up. There are multiple ways of doing this. Oftentimes, with small retailers and restaurants, what happens is that they have a version of a point-of-sale system. A point-of-sale system is the card reader that you you swipe your card through at the cash register. And sometimes the smaller businesses have these point-of-sale readers that actually have a back door in them for the manufacturer to be able to get into the system. And we've seen quite often how this happens with restaurants, is that the thief figures out the password to the back door. Sometimes it's a default password of 1234, and they can get in, and the card data isn't encrypted, and so they grab it that way. With a system like Target's, Target has been in the process of actually changing over to new point-of-sale systems that are supposed to encrypt the data as soon as the card is swiped. And I'm not sure how many of the stores actually have that enabled yet. But there are multiple ways that the hackers could have obtained the data here. It's possible that they had malware on the point-of-sale system itself so that they are getting the card data as it's being swiped. It's possible that at some point in the target network, the data is not encrypted. It's supposed to be encrypted in transit, but it's unclear if target encrypts that immediately at the point of sale device, or if they encrypt it somewhere on their server before they send it to a bank for authorization. So there are a lot of details here that are unknown, and it's unclear in the end how many target might reveal.
Kim Zetter, senior writer who covers cybersecurity for Wired. Eva Velasquez, what does this signify? Is this the canary in the coal mine for this sort of issue? What do you take away from the target experience?
Well, breaches are not exactly rare. We track breaches, and we're probably going to have over 600 that we're tracking for this year alone. I think that the reason this is really resonating with consumers is, one, it is a very large breach. It's a massive breach. It's not the largest. And Target is a well-known brand. And then, then you add on top of that that it's the holiday season and a lot of people are shopping, and that heightens the anxiety. And I do think it's important to mention that not only were credit cards used at those point-of-sale machines, but debit cards were used also. And so while it's true that consumers will not be liable for fraudulent charges on their credit card and the inconvenience factor will simply be replacing the card, with a debit card, we are asking consumers to be more vigilant in monitoring their statements, because with a credit card, you know, that's your incidental income. You're using a line of credit for separate purchases. Your bank account is the money that you are using to live on. And if that gets tied up even for a few days, that can be more of a hardship for some consumers. They simply don't have the resources to float it. So there is a difference there.
So that's a useful point that maybe we should underline for a moment. There's more. The concern is not so much, I assume, that their debit cards are somehow intrinsically more vulnerable than credit cards. It's just that the hassle factor and the pain associated with a compromise of a debit card is greater. Is that right, Eva?
Well, the protections are different for a debit card versus a credit card. And they vary from financial institution to institution. So consumers do need to check with their specific institution what the levels of liability and the protection are. But yes, it is more of the fact that you will, generally speaking, when fraud occurs, your financial institution is going to work with you and they're going to resolve the issue. But if it does take even a couple of days, if it's your entire bank account that perhaps it's drained, there are many people that they can't even put gas in their car to get to their job. So it can be more than an inconvenience, and the hassle factor is greatly increased.
Eva Velasquez at the Identity Theft Resource Center, a nonprofit in San Diego.
Can I just add something to
that? Yeah, please.
She's right in the sense of the debit cards. With the credit cards, of course, there's a bit of a buffer there between the charge to your account, and you can dispute it and all that. With the debit card, of course, they can get straight into your account and drain it. However, Target has not indicated that PIN numbers were stolen in this yet. Mm. They actually didn't specify that. So it's unclear yet whether or not the thieves obtained just account numbers and PIN numbers. And in that case, if they did obtain the PIN numbers, then they would be able to drain accounts in that way.
So Lisa Chevrolet at the FTC, is one of the lessons that we should take from this, particularly this time of year, is sort of be careful which card you're using. And do you have recommendations about whether or not people should be more judicious in the way they use their debit cards versus the way they use their credit cards?
Well, it is generally safer to use credit cards than debit cards because, as the other speakers have mentioned, there are different protections for debit and credit cards, and generally there are more protections for credit cards than debit cards. But when something like this happens, there really may be no reasonable way for consumers to avoid being victims of this type of data breach. But there certainly are steps that consumers can take to prevent being identity theft victims. And generally, we tell people to protect what you have, be careful what you share, and monitor your account statements. So if you have personal information, you want to protect it by using strong passwords and secure connections online. And if it's in paper form, you want to dispose of it properly and keep it under lock and key while you have it. And then being careful what you share is a very important tip. That may not apply to the target data breach, but applies in many other identity theft situations, which is don't give out information unless you know who you are giving it to. And there are a lot of scams around the holidays that prey on this, charity scams and other phishing scams, even with e-cards with Santa Claus on them. So you have to be aware of those types of scams as well, and don't give out any personal information unless you're sure who you're talking to. And don't click on unsolicited links and emails, including e-cards around the holidays. Then the last tip is just to monitor your accounts, to check your accounts, both your credit card and your bank accounts and your debit card accounts, and most importantly, to check your credit report at annualcreditreport.com. At this time of year, it's a good time to remember at the start of the new year to get your finances in order and make a check of your credit report at least annually. And again, the legitimate site for doing that is annualcreditreport.com.
Lisa Schifferle at the Federal Trade Commission. Lisa listed out a lot of different things that people can do, and I want to dive into some of those to think about the ways in which people can be made more safe during this time of year in particular. And let's start with the question of Eva Velasquez about sort of where you shop, because one of the recommendations that I've read is, you know, be careful about where you shop. Don't just sort of use your card willy-nilly on online in particular. But one would think a huge brand like Target would be safer in terms of when you're doing an actual, you know, in-person purchase. Do you have any thoughts about that? I mean, does this tell us that really shopping at a mom-and-pop store versus a giant brand, that you have to be careful no matter what?
Well, you do have to be careful no matter what. And you certainly want to, as another speaker mentioned, you want to guard your personal information, you want to guard your financial information, and don't just give it out to anyone. You know, in the case of Target, really, consumers were, even if they were very vigilant, you can do everything right and still become a victim of either a data breach or identity theft. There are no guarantees. So putting steps in place to minimize your risk is really all that a consumer can do. And again, in the case of Target, they do have robust practices in place, and apparently the hackers still got in. That's really not an issue that consumers can address themselves, but for them to lessen their chances, they do want to be careful where they shop online, especially during the holidays. I saw this in my days at the Better Business Bureau all the time. A really slick website would go up with electronics on sale for $200 less than you could get them anywhere else. And as long as the pictures looked really great, people would happily send over their credit card information, not even really knowing who they're doing business with. So you want to make sure that you can trust the entity that you're doing business with, and you want to do your homework a little bit, even checking with third-party resources to see what other consumers are saying. Don't just immediately go, great, I'm going to go for this deal, or respond to that email where you get this great deal for something that you've been looking for. Do your homework and make sure you know who you're doing business with.
So you want to watch for where you shop online in particular. You want to watch for deals that are too good to be true, because there's probably a problem with that. And Kim Setter, tell us something about this question of, you know, what you click on, and being careful about, you know, clicking on attachments, particularly when they come perhaps from a retailer that you might not be familiar with. What should consumers be watching for? Is there a way to know whether or not that attachment that looks like the deal of the century is not a good thing to click on?
No, it's. I mean, there's a larger problem here on attachments and malicious links than is not connected to credit card numbers. Any time that you get an email with a suspicious link or an attachment on it, there is the possibility that it's going to take you to a malicious website where malware will be downloaded to your system, not just to get your credit card number, but to get your bank account passwords, login credentials, to get your passwords for email, anything like that. So there's always a danger across the board of anything that you click on, whether it's an attachment or a link. There's not a whole lot that users can do. I mean, if it's an obvious, for instance, like a promotion like that, you shouldn't be clicking on those. You shouldn't be looking at them. But, you know, the phishers who send out these malicious emails are very clever, and they have ways of making it look like it's coming from a trusted source. They have ways of making it look like an email like this is coming from your boss or someone that you know. So, you know, the best that you can do is keep your antivirus signatures up to date. But the hackers get around that as well. So,
and one thing to watch for, I guess, this time of year as well, Kim, is greeting cards, which is a clever way of getting in on this time of year, because people send out these, you know, nice electronic greeting cards, and they are something that can also contain those attachments that you really don't want to click on.
Yeah, you know, a lot of this stuff is sort of automated, and you know, Gmail is interesting. They've instituted this new policy that all of any images that are coming in email are going to be displayed within your email rather than as attachment that you have to click on, and that's designed to be a little safer because the opening of it is going to be done on their server rather than on your local system. So, you know, there are measures. The companies are constantly trying to devise new ways of protecting you, but the hackers are always one or two steps ahead, and they're going to find another way to get around that.
Kim Zenner, senior writer at Wired Magazine. Hang on one second, please. Just wanted to identify Kim. Go ahead, and who is that, please?
Sorry, this is Lisa Schifferle from the FTC. I just wanted to add something quick about online shopping and a couple tips for
just give us one if you
the
would.
Holiday season.
Yeah, just give us one.
Yes, don't use Wi-Fi to online shop and use the secure connection. Look for HTTPS or the lock symbol.
Okay, so let me just ask you that about that. That's an important one. You want that last letter S, Lisa, is important, and tell us why.
That shows that it's a secure connection that you are using to do your online shopping, or you can look for the little lock icon.
Okay, so always look for HTTPS with the S on the end. We want you to join our conversation, too. If you have questions or concerns about whether you shopped at Target, or ideas or questions about how you can make your identity more secure, you can join us now at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. Jody writes in, posting this on our Facebook page, is changing one's PIN enough in the Target situation? Eva Velasquez?
Well, it really depends. As one of the other speakers stated, Target has not come out and said that the PIN numbers have been compromised. And so we aren't necessarily saying that everyone should go out and get a new card and change their PIN. However, you do want to call your financial institution and ask them what they recommend. They're all going to have a mechanism in place. This is so big that they know what's going on, and they will give you good advice about how to handle the situation and what protections they have. They may say get a new card and change your PIN. And frankly, you should be changing your PIN on a semi-regular basis anyway.
Define semi-regular, if you would.
At least annually. I mean, we recommend changing passwords and PINs every 90 days, but that many consumers say that's just far too cumbersome. But if you've had the same PIN for years and years, you need to change it anyway. I would say, why not now? If you're a victim of the breach and you haven't changed your PIN in a long time, it certainly can't hurt. But we aren't going to recommend that everyone who used a debit card run out and get a new card and change their PIN immediately.
Bob writes in, we have a Target Red card. Should we cancel it forthwith or wait until we hear something from Target? Lisa Schifferle, what do you think?
I'm not familiar with the Target Red card and what that is.
Target has said that the red accounts are not affected.
Okay, so that's a special kind of Target card, and what about generally in terms of the question, Kim Zetter, on you know, people are complaining this morning that they can't get through to Target. What do you suggest people do in this sort of circumstance where there are 40 million unhappy people and not that many people answering the phone?
Well, I think that you know, the advice so far has been to watch your statements. If you're seeing any kind of fraudulent charges on your statements with your credit card, if you see any kind of withdrawal from your bank account, then that's really when you should act. Contact the bank immediately and get your account changed. I mean, if you are worried about your PIN number, I never use, for instance, a debit card shopping at all. I only use a credit card, and I only use a debit card at an ATM and a bank ATM. I won't use it at an ATM inside a casino or a convenience store or anything like that. So that's one thing that, that consumers should do going forward is just don't use your debit card.
And again, underline why that's the case, because I think many of us, you know, no longer write checks, use debit cards sort of all the time for everything.
Well, the debit card, as we were saying, it's a more immediate access to your bank account.
Yeah.
Again, with a credit card, there's a buffer there. There's a charge there that you can dispute. With the bank account, they've already drained your account before you see it. And then there's this inconvenience of not having that money and having to explain to the bank that you didn't authorize that withdrawal. So it's always safer just not to use something that doesn't have a buffer like that. I know for many people that won't be a convenient option. But you do have to understand that that is the risk that you take when you use a debit card.
Kim Zetter at Wired Magazine. Let's go to our first caller this morning. Chris joins us in San Francisco. Chris, go ahead.
Hi there. I'm an online retailer. We deal in high-end items, and I just wanted to mention something that wasn't mentioned prior that can help curb the online theft. And that's basically when the vendor or retailer only ships items to the billing address of the credit card. That's our policy, and because of that, it's really difficult for thieves to get our merchandise. We ship high-end bicycles, and we always mandate that we ship to the billing address of the credit card. So I think, you know, because of that, thieves stay away from us. But I think if more online retailers had that policy, that you'd see less theft.
That's not really viable.
Chris, thanks for the call. And sorry, who was that chiming in?
I'm sorry, this is Kim Zetter. How do you order a gift for someone if you're getting it shipped to their address if you can only ship to the buyer's address? So, I mean, most consumers, they want that convenience of being able to ship to another address. Again, with the Target issue here, what they're looking for is not necessarily to do online purchases with these cards, because in order to do an online purchase, they need the security code as well. And it's unclear, the information is unclear from Target whether or not they actually obtained the security code. Some reports say they did, some reports say they didn't. What they would be able to do in this case is emboss the stolen account data onto another blank card and do in-store purchases
with
it.
Chris, thanks for the call. And we take your point. I mean, especially if you're buying something that's high-end, which could occasionally, I suppose, be a high-end bike, could be a gift. But one safeguard you can do is from a retailer's standpoint, is to only ship to the address. So thank you for that tip. Another thing I've heard, and Eva Velasquez, maybe you can chime in on this, is that it's actually a good idea when retailers, online sites like Chris or others, ask for that 3-digit number that's on the back of your card, because the only way you'll know that is if someone actually physically has the card. So it's one way of protecting the retailers actually helping you. Is that right?
Well, yes, it's another layer of protection, but you don't actually physically have to have the card. If someone has a copy of the front and the back of the card, then that's negated. So is it an extra form of layer of protection, and is it a good thing? Yes. Is it the end-all be-all where you simply can't fall victim to fraud because of that? No. And I do want to mention something, one more thing about the red cards, just for the other people that were
listening.
Just
briefly, because we're about to take a break.
Okay. Their red cards are issued by Target, and they are both credit cards, and they're also debit cards that are attached to your checking account. So the protections on those are different as well.
We will return in just a moment. Take more of your questions. Lots of people are lining up, concerned about how to protect their identity and their bank accounts during this time of year. We'll provide some more tips and answer as many of your questions as we can. You can join us now by calling 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your questions on our Facebook page or on our website. Back with more in just a moment. This is Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, identity security and identity theft, what consumers can do to protect their identity and not be subject to the kinds of scams that are so prevalent, particularly this time of year during the holiday season. We want to take your calls and answer as many of your questions as we can at 866-733-6786. Email us as well at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts on our Facebook page. Sharon writes in, the Target story that hit the news just reinforces my resolve to only shop with cash. I live on pretty low income, so it's not hard to do, but I can't afford to lose what I have, so cash it is. It's an interesting question, Lisa Schifferle. Is this a time when sort of doing things the old-fashioned way by cash or writing checks is actually a pretty good idea?
Well, certainly I know my grandparents always bought everything only in cash and only paid for what they had money for. But I don't think that's realistic really anymore. I mean, most of us are used to using credit cards and even debit cards for purchases. And there's also the risk for some of us, depending where we live, of carrying around large sums of cash, maybe less safe than, you know, being prone to identity theft. So it's a balancing act for anyone, and it's everyone's personal decision, really, what they are comfortable doing or not. But en masse, I don't think the American public is ready to move to all cash. I mean, there need to be greater protections for consumers who use their debit and credit cards, and that's part of what the FTC is there to do.
Well, on that point, person writes in saying, this isn't helpful, just saying that the consumer is responsible. While that's generally true, millions of people were affected by Target's incompetence. Avoiding dodgy websites is worn out advice. What do we do about this situation? Is Target doing anything? So someone, Eva Velasquez, who really wants to hold Target accountable. Is that fair? I mean, is this Target's fault?
Well, yes, it's fair to hold them accountable. This was their data breach. I don't know that it's fair to say at this time that they were negligent or that they were simply not concerned about their consumers. I think that the fact that they released this information and let consumers know so quickly, especially during the holiday season.
But they were sort of outed, weren't they? I mean, by the Krebs website?
Brian Krebs did that, but I don't know how many individuals in the general public are aware of a lot of these. You know, anybody in this space knows who Brian Krebs is and reads his updates, but I'm not sure that the general public would be. And I still do think they had some choices to make, and they made the right ones in alerting their consumers. And how they handle it from here on out will definitely show that they, you know, how the, if they care or not, or how they want to treat their consumers and what they're going to do for them. Yes, ultimately they are going to be responsible for the aftermath of this situation. And consumers, generally speaking, are not going to be held accountable for any of these fraudulent charges. And I also think that we do, as consumers, we do have to take some personal responsibility for our finances, for taking care of ourselves and minimizing our risk. And to simply put it off on all of the retailers and vendors that you do business with, it doesn't work that way. We do need to take some steps and some personal responsibility.
Let's hear from more of our callers this morning. Judith is up next. Judith, go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for the show. I have been getting spam emails from Amazon.com saying that my order is being shipped. And I've gotten about 8 of these, and they each have different shipment orders on them. The disturbing thing about it is that when I do open it, and I haven't opened the attachment, but when I open it, it has suggestions for other items that are based on my personal browsing history that goes way back, meaning that the site must have been hacked into.
So I
notified Amazon, and they said, oh, just delete it. It's spam, and we're working on it. However, I asked for a supervisor to call me back. I asked what they're doing about it. And no one responded, and I have continued to receive more of these.
All right, let's see if we can get a little more information on this. Kim Zetter, have you done any reporting on this? Is there something going on with Amazon? And then also, if you would, what should people do when they get what seemingly are bogus shipping announcements?
Okay, so I'm not clear on what she was saying. This was an announcement from Amazon itself or from someone else based on her shipment?
Judith, it came from Amazon?
It says it's from Amazon.com, and it says your shipment is being ordered, and you'll be notified additionally. And when you open it, there's a number to click on to go to the shipment to see which shipment it is. And it also has other suggestions that are based on my personal browsing history.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
And we're very old.
Okay. All right. Okay. Judith, let's see if we can get you some answers. Kim, go ahead.
That sounds like a legitimate email from Amazon, and simply Amazon has a history of your browsing. If you haven't purchased anything, if you've clicked on an item to look at it, Amazon is tracking that. And if you look at other items, you're going to actually see on that web page the previous items that you've viewed. So Amazon is looking at what any item that you're examining, any items that you purchase, and that is their policy is that they are going to try and offer you similar items. It's just a marketing tool.
But in a way, it shows how duff this is to start out, because Judith is also saying she called Amazon and Amazon said, oh, well, it's spam, delete it. So it's hard to know.
Well, I'm not sure that they understood what she was saying. If I'm understanding what she's saying, and this is a legitimate email that came from Amazon, it's simply their marketing. Many companies do this. If you buy a product from a company, they're going to try and sell you more products. So that sounds like what this is. There is also a separate spam that comes to you. It's not just Amazon that is also tracking your purchases. It's the advertisers that are tracking your purchases. For instance, if you buy an item from Amazon, you might notice then that every other website that you go visit is trying to sell you that same item somewhere. So, if you buy a pair of shoes from a certain company, you might suddenly notice that when you go to visit other sites, the ads that are being served to you in your browser are for that company that you just bought from.
Right. So any purchase triggers sort of an avalanche of stuff, and it sounds like the rule to pay attention to in Judith's case and others is be careful then at what comes back at you and what you should click on. Frida writes, I recently shopped at Target, another Target question. I use my debit card for shopping, but I use my debit card as a credit card and didn't use my PIN. So would hackers then still have access to my bank account since I didn't use my PIN? Eva Velasquez, can you answer that?
Well, they would. That money is all still coming from the same pot. The transaction is just different.
So I thought that I'm with this email writer, and I perhaps am suffering under the same misconception about this. I thought that if I use my debit card as a credit card, that was safer. Not true?
I believe because it's still issued by your financial institution, the protections are still not the same. And somebody from FTC or Kristen, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the transaction is going through as a credit transaction, but it's still coming out of your bank account.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else want to weigh in on that? Because I think this is maybe a common misconception.
This is Kim with Wired. If they don't have that PIN number, then they're not going to be able to authorize that transaction, my understanding is. If you're using your debit card as a credit card transaction there, I believe there is still that buffer. Again, I don't know what the transaction is how it's viewed from the bank side, though. So I'll pass that back to one of the other.
Okay. This is Eva. It sounds like the answer is contact your individual financial institution and find out what the protections are for your credit card. But I do know from personal experience that debit cards that have a credit card or are capable of being used as a credit card can be used in fraudulent transactions without the PIN. They can be used as a credit card.
Right.
We've
as a credit
seen
card.
With our victims.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But not to drain the account. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to Peter next in San Francisco. Peter, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. It's Peter Warfield. I wanted to say when you say there's no guarantees, I want to repeat, I think cash is absolutely a guarantee of no problems. You can go to the Target store or any other store and pay cash. They don't know anything about you, and they don't know anything from your cash. The other thing that I haven't heard seriously considered is what the difference between credit and a check. You can pay by check in person, by mail, and sometimes by phone. The other point I wanted to make is I believe that identity theft is absolutely a responsibility of the corporations that have set up the system that put people at risk and make them vulnerable. And if they were held accountable for the damages and the losses that they create when they do sloppy systems or poorly protected systems, they would make better systems. Right now, there's no accountability. It's all on the consumer.
Peter, thank you. Thanks for the observation. Another vote for cash and checks, and another vote to sort of make the companies more accountable. From the FTC, go ahead, Lisa. From the FTC,
yeah.
What's your point of view on that?
Well, I wanted to respond to that because part of what the FTC does, in addition to having an identity theft team which trains consumers and advocates on how to deter identity theft, is that we have a rigorous law enforcement program, and we've brought over 45 data security cases. We're almost at our 50th data security case where we do sue companies who do not adequately protect consumer data. So that is one of the FTC's function, and we have been doing it and continue to do it.
How many companies have you taken to task in that way?
There are almost 50 companies that we have had data security cases against that are public investigations.
Here's a comment from Gary, who writes in, the guests so far sound somewhat naive about the sophisticated strategies that guide these attacks. For instance, the advice to carefully watch your accounts and the reassurance that you won't be liable ignores two important facts. Thieves know that they can get access to billions of accounts regularly for small amounts with innocuous names in the merchant field, such as IDA parking. This means that you must not only check your accounts, but you must remember clearly every single small charge, correctly understand the merchant's name, and that otherwise you must be willing to devote your time to resolving those small matters. So it's actually a good point, Eva Velasquez, because I know when I see my accounts and you see sometimes these merchant names and you don't have a clue as to who that actually was. So what's your thought or advice on that?
Well, and here's where we're getting to personal choices. So we have some folks calling in saying, cash is king. I choose to deal with the inconvenience of not using credit cards or debit cards and only using cash. I choose to deal with the risk of carrying large sums of cash when I'm making purchases because that's what I want to do. And if you're going to use credit cards and debit cards for the convenience factor, well, the flip side of that is you do need to track those purchases. And while we absolutely believe that we do have to hold industry accountable for any mistakes that they made, we do have to hold them accountable for creating a system that has allowed identity theft to grow. We do also believe that consumers have their own, they do have a responsibility. They are a part of the system, and so you do need to check those statements. And this also brings up the point that the thieves know that they can sit on these numbers and they can sit on these accounts and wait until people stop being vigilant and then start using them again. But that's why we promote regular vigilance.
So let me ask you.
I want to add something, if I could. This is Lisa Schifferle at the FTC, and the caller mentioned that, you know, just checking your accounts is not enough, and I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the advice we give to all ID theft victims also is to call the credit reporting agencies, check your credit report, get a copy of it, see what other things the thief may have done with your information.
Yeah, good point.
Because even if they, you know, once they have one bit of information, they can use it in other contexts and misuse it. And we know that years after theft, identity thieves still may misuse it or sell it to someone else that misuses it.
Yeah, it's sort of the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it? And you have
exactly.
to be aware of sort of all the ripple effects. Something like checking your credit rating is not necessarily something that you would
right.
necessarily do, but it can affect that. Let me ask you something about what each of you do or would recommend on the question of passwords, which drives everyone crazy, you know, changing your passwords or trying to remember them. And Aaron writes in, I use 30-character passwords. Passwords. Oh, my goodness. Including special characters for every account because I want to keep them secure. I mean, is that right, Kim Zetter? I mean, do you have to get that sophisticated with your use of passwords?
I think that you should match your passwords to the risk that you have. If you have sort of throwaway accounts online that you're just you know, sometimes you have to sign up for an account just to get information or things. You don't need to use that kind of security. I think for your email accounts, things that you really, banking accounts, things like that, I would agree with that. I know that most people don't. I use 24-character passwords. But that's not reasonable for most people. And, of course, if you're changing them quite often, there are people that use password managers, things like that. So there are a lot of different solutions, and each person can find the one that's right for them. But you definitely should not be using the same password for important accounts over and over again.
Don writes in today's Chronicle about the Target debacle, no one seems to mention American Express. It's all about Target cards, Visa, and MasterCard. Is there something stronger about American Express? Eva Velasquez, do you know?
Well, they do. I know that American Express has a different system in that they see both sides of the transaction. I'm not an expert in it, but I know that their fraud analytics I hesitate to say they're more robust, but I know that they are different, and so it may be that there's a difference that those weren't compromised. That I don't know. The statement from Target does not specify anywhere in it the types of cards. It just says credit cards and debit cards that were used during that time frame.
Yeah, can I interject?
That's all I've seen.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Kinzer from Wired. I'd said previously that the red cards weren't affected. I'd seen in a statement like that initially, and I went back and looked during the break, and there is no indication that red cards weren't also affected. So people who have red cards would be affected.
Okay, so do be concerned as well.
Yeah.
Let's go next to Anna in San Francisco. Anna, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi. I occasionally make purchases in Europe with my U.S. credit card, and it does not always work because there are some additional security elements to credit card use, in Northern Europe at least. And so my question is twofold. Is there a time frame for when such things might be implemented in the U.S.? And then would that have made a difference in the Target case?
Yeah, great question, Anna. Thank you. Lisa Schifferle, what about that? In Europe, Roddy has posted this on our Facebook page, that in the EU, they use a chip instead of, I guess, the sort of swipe system. So are there things that the EU countries are doing that make their cards more secure? And is this something the FTC is considering as a possibility to regulate here in the United States?
Well, the EU does use a chip and PIN system, so if someone gets your card, they also need a PIN for a credit card, similar to debit cards here. And the FTC, I can't comment on the FTC and its regulation with regard to this issue, but I know there is a movement in the United States to implement chip and PIN systems as well. I'm not sure what the time frame is on that.
Would that be a good idea, Eva Velasquez, to push for that sort of card? Would that really take care of some of these problems?
It's definitely part of the conversation, and I do know that the privacy protections and the protections in Europe, in the EU in general, are stronger than they are here, and there's a lot of discussion about that. I believe it's called EMV type of security, I think, is actually being implemented, I want to say next year, maybe it's the year after.
This year.
It is. Oh, it is this year?
Yeah, there were deadlines for implementing beginning of this year.
Okay. So yes, I mean, it is a good idea for us as a country to always be looking for the best practices that other people have implemented and mirror those. And if they're safer, then we should absolutely be employing them.
Anna, thanks for the call. Jonathan writes in, I've been getting those Amazon emails too. This is a reference to our earlier caller who was concerned about them. I've gotten about a dozen of them the past 2 weeks, and I haven't ordered anything from Amazon. So they're definitely scams. So please correct what your guest was saying about that. Always look at the return address. It says Amazon, but the hyperlink is another address, and that's a surefire way to spot a phishing expedition. Kim Zetter, you were the one who was saying it sounded like legit. So you want to come back on that?
Yeah, I mean, if you are going to be getting spam and you are going to be getting phishing attacks, and oftentimes, like I said, they will appear to come from legitimate. So you might get something that looks like it's coming from Amazon and it's not. You may get something that is coming from Amazon. I guess the best way to judge that is, you know if you've made a recent purchase and you're expecting a shipping announcement from Amazon, then you know that it's going to be likely a legitimate announcement. If you're getting them during times that you haven't purchased, then obviously you shouldn't be clicking on those. I wanted to also just suggest something else, is that, if people are concerned about this, there's sort of a compromise between using cash and using credit cards. You could get a prepaid card for your online purchases, so that would remove you from the regular credit card that you use for all of your other business transactions, and you wouldn't have to use a debit card. And a prepaid card would basically be a card that you purchase that you feed a certain amount of cash into, and you use that only for your online purchases. And so if it gets stolen or breached in some way, then you're not going to have to cancel all of your other cards, and it's not going to affect all of your other accounts.
Well, that's interesting. I'd like to learn more about that. Galen posts this on her Facebook page. I have a separate card that I use for online recurring transactions. I don't know if it's one in the way in which you were describing, Kim. But and so then if that number is stolen, I won't have to update every recurring charge. I guess that is a separate card that he has. But does that make sense to sort of have one card, whether it's the purchased one that you were just describing, Kim Zetter, or a regular card that you exclusively use for online purchasing? Does that make sense?
I think it does, because like I said, you know, and she points out, the reader points out, or the listener points out, that if that card is compromised, then you're not having to go back to every other business that you have that card on file, your real card on file with, and changing it. And that card, that prepaid card, you know, is going to be limited in the amount of money that you've put in there.
Here's another, this is number two. Yeah, go ahead, Lisa, please.
I was going to say, I think it does make sense from a data security perspective, perhaps, to have a separate card for online recurring transactions. But I just want to warn listeners that, you know, if you run out and open out a new line of credit for online recurring transactions, that could affect your, you know, credit rating and credit score, opening additional credit. So that's why, I mean, I do like the suggestion that Amy had about a prepaid card for online purchases only, because that way you aren't affecting your credit rating in any way by opening additional lines of credit.
Yeah, thank you. That was, I think, Kim, is that her suggestion? Here's an email from Gary, who writes, you're failing to acknowledge that there is a systematic flaw in the credit card infrastructure. There's some fairly obvious things that can be done. For instance, credit card transactions could require a PIN. PIN codes could automatically expire regularly. Retailers could be required to ask for an ID. Anyway, interesting ideas. What about that, that you have a PIN that would regularly expire? Does that make sense, Eva Velasquez?
Well, I think it's not that we're failing to mention these. It's that there are solutions that can be put in place. And for every person, security versus convenience is different for everyone. And so you have industry who is trying to walk that balance. You will have a set of consumers who will all tell you, absolutely, I want that. I want heightened security. I want to jump through 20 hoops to get to my money or my line of credit, and they are absolutely okay with it. And then you will have a set of consumers that says, don't make me work that hard for my own money. I don't want to have to jump through those hoops. So there are absolutely, there are flaws within the system, no doubt. We need to continue to work towards addressing them, but it's these solutions aren't simple. They're not easy, and they won't be easy to implement, and they still won't make everyone happy.
I want to come back and just ask you for some your kind of final tips on this, how to contend in our last few minutes here with the holiday season and things to do or things to avoid. One thing that I've read, Eva Velasquez, is don't buy those kind of gift cards off the rack, and that they're, because those can more easily be compromised. People could have peeled off the sticker, written down the number, and then stuck it back on the rack. You agree with that? Those because gift cards are obviously very commonly purchased this time of year. Should you not buy those off the rack? And any other tips for people this holiday season?
Well, I have heard, and it has been done where those cards have been compromised. I don't believe that we need to say don't ever buy them off the rack. I think you need to look at the establishment that you're choosing, and I also think you need to look at where the cards are placed. And if they are placed in view of many of the employees, then chances are that they are less likely to be compromised because it would be harder. Now, that doesn't address insider and employee issues, which are also common. You know, there are no 100% guarantees. Can those be compromised? Yes. Are we willing to take the position that we're going to tell consumers not to purchase them off the rack? In an abundance of caution, they can certainly choose that, but that's certainly not as bad as going to a scammy website or some of the other things that you can do to put yourself in danger and at risk.
Here's a good question that we haven't addressed yet, which is about Wi-Fi. The question is all Wi-Fi created equal? Some of our listeners are saying that they're confident about their home Wi-Fi, but they worry about using Wi-Fi at a coffee shop. When you're at a sort of publicly open Wi-Fi, a Starbucks or wherever, a Kim Zetter, is that something where you should be careful and not a good place to make purchases in particular?
Well, the Wi-Fi, you should understand that anyone else who is on that Wi-Fi with you can see your traffic. If you're using, I think one of the other recommendations was that you should only be doing transactions with a site that has a secure socket layer, and that is a site that has an HTTPS, which is going to encrypt the data in transit. That's going to protect your data in that way. So, you know, the Wi-Fis aren't secure for the rest of your traffic, but if it is encrypted traffic, then you're okay in that.
A couple more quick questions. Kim, go ahead and take this one, too. Cell phones, are they more vulnerable for being hacked than using a traditional computer? And are iPhones safer than Androids?
So cell phones now, because they are mini computers, they have the same vulnerabilities as all of your other computers do. They're using, you know, different operating systems, but the hackers, of course, are finding vulnerabilities in the cell phones as well. So, no, the bottom line answer is no. they're all pretty vulnerable. Some of them are a little more vulnerable than others.
Lisa, a question about PayPal. This person, Keith, writes, I've been using PayPal. Is that something that's safer to make payments with?
I can't really answer that because that's going to depend on a whole variety of factors, including PayPal's data security system, you know, how you are using PayPal, whether you're using it a Wi-Fi hotspot, whether you're using a secure connection. Certainly PayPal is designed to have certain protections, but it's going to depend on how the user uses PayPal and how effective PayPal's protections actually are and what you're comparing it to.
Okay, 10 seconds each. Last best advice for the holidays. Eva?
React, but don't panic.
Okay, good. Lisa?
Check out ftc.gov/IDTheft for more tips on identity theft and how to deter it.
Okay, great. And Kim Setter, last advice for people who have 5 more shopping days till Christmas.
I guess just monitoring your statements, and if you can, use a prepaid card for your purchases.
Kim Setter of Wired Magazine. Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome.
Lisa Schifferle joins us, too, from the FTC. Lisa, thank you.
Thank you.
And Eva Velasquez, CEO of Identity Theft Resource Center, a nonprofit in San Diego. Eva, thanks very much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Amanda Supai is our engagement producer. Jim Bennett is our engineer this hour. And Dan Zoll is our senior editor. I'm Dave Iverson. We'll be back for a second hour in just a moment where we do some memory walking down Candlestick Lane. That's next on Forum in just a moment.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.